This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, well, hello everyone. Welcome to Lucha or Undead Reborn. This is another part in our series on Get to Know the PTBN PWO. We have special guest Chad Campbell tonight. Chad, how are you doing?
Doing great, guys. How's it going?
Doing fantastic. Good, We're both doing good. Adrian, how are you?
Doing great, Tim. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm very excited. We have big news. I think if people are listening to this, they probably already have figured it out, unless they haven't, which in case then they didn't, that we are now on the PTBN Podcast Network. And so, yeah, to celebrate that, that's why we wanted to have Chad on. Chad, you're kind of one of the head honchos over there at PTBN. You are one of the original founding members, on top of the fact, I think I saw somewhere it said like managing editor or something along those lines. What title do you prefer?
Well, when we first created the site, we had these nice official titles, and over time those have kind of went away, but I guess kind of part of the inner circle, definitely at placetobenation.com. So
I have a question about that really quick, if you don't mind, Tim. What's like the hierarchy like over there? Like, what's like, how does that work exactly? Is there a hierarchy, or is it just more of a casual type of thing?
Well, I would say kind of from a behind the curtain type thing. When the site was created, there was sort of four main voices there. It was myself, Scott Criscolo, and Justin Rosero, them two host the Place to Be podcast, and then Brad Woodling, who is really the number one guy. Like, the website would not exist if it wasn't for Brad. He was the one that had the idea for it. He got the ball rolling, got the license, trademarked the name, the domain, and everything, and really set the bones of the website. So when we launched on June 1st, 2013, those were kind of, we called ourselves the core four of the website. And since then, I would say those have kind of remained the four integral people, but then there's been a couple other people that have really stepped up. One has been Glenn Butler. He does a lot of our editing and HTML on the back end stuff now. Another one was Jason Greenhouse, who does all of our social media tweeting and Facebook posts and stuff, and that's really helped drive traffic. And then a good old Parv, because we had the PWO PTBN podcast feed, and me and Parv are kind of the two main components of that feed, and everybody else has sort of latched on to what originally was just Where the Big Boys Play and then Titans of Wrestling.
Okay, cool. All right, yeah, I was just curious, and obviously now that we're part of the network, you know, it's good to know, you know, what's what and stuff and who's who, so, yeah.
Adrian just wants to know who he has to go, like how he can go over your head. He's trying to figure out who's the chain of command.
Talk to Brad. Always refer to Brad. Brad's your guy.
I think Adrian has plans here. He's actually protecting himself just in case you decide to sexually harass him on this Skype call.
Right, right.
Also, to usurp his power.
I really highly doubt that. I think Chad is the immovable object at this point in PTBN.
Got it.
I mean, yeah, but Where the Big Boys Play, it's such a great show. But me coming in, I think, weirdly, I think one of the first shows that I listened to from PTBN was obviously the Place to Be Nation podcast, and I always kind of find it odd, and then having you explain it, that it was the four of you guys that started up, I always kind of was like, why is it this Justin and Scott guy, and then I hear about Brad and Chad, like they're the guys who really run the website, so why are these other two guys? And then I like kind of got more ingrained as I started listening more, figuring everything out, and I was like, oh, okay, so that's who Brad and Chad is. But it always kind of felt like you guys were like a shadow cabal. Somehow you ran this network with these two guys who did the podcast with the name of the network on it, but you didn't really hear from you guys that much, especially with the Brad and Chad show having been on kind of a long-term hiatus. It seemed very odd for me.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, really, PTBN kind of came from an extension of the Facebook community that they already had created. They have a live chats Facebook community that's off of the Place to Be podcast, which has, I don't know, like 160 members. It's still pretty active to this day. I mean, at least a couple of threads every day. So kind of the website was sort of an offshoot of that. And then Justin actually owns a message board, which he may not want me to give out the name of because it's pretty desolate now. But that's where they were doing like their written reviews and cross-posting their podcasts and stuff too, as well.
Yeah, I think I've actually heard him mention that before on podcasts.
Even recently.
But it's kind of like the Temple of Vin. I don't know if you're familiar with like F4W lore, but Vincent Verhey. Someone came out eventually and posted, like, did a mirror link to his original website from when he was, like, early in college, and he was really embarrassed by it. Nice. So that's kind of Justin's thing. He probably doesn't want people to know too much about his board that doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So you mentioned Parv came in. Parv was actually our first guest. He was our first guest when we kind of undertook in this series that we're doing. Our first actual guest is kind of an interesting one, but I'm not gonna spill the beans on that here. Maybe at a later date we'll go over that a little bit more deeply. But Parv was our first guest for the PTBN kind of family, PWO family. And you mentioned he came in, and that kind of was the start of the PWO crossover. So he was kind of representing the PWO. Am I correct in following that thought?
Yeah, I would say me and him are kind of the two main liaisons that sort of bridge the gap between the PTB community and the PWO one.
Yeah, and that's another one that where, like I said, it kind of you again are like shadowy in the background, because it seems like with the Dangerous Alliance show, it seems like the concept of the show is that it's a PTBN guy and a PWO guy, and once again, it's Justin and Will. Meanwhile, you know, Justin doesn't post on the PWO board quite as much. Much as you do. I see you posting on there all the time. I mean, me and you are having conversations right about Dragon Gate, and I don't know if Justin even knows what Dragon Gate is.
Probably very, very little knowledge. Yeah, I kind of feel like, I mean, in a lot of ways, I'm kind of all over the place with that, I would say, for sure. Whereas Justin and Scott are kind of your pillars of the PTB side of the community, which is, you know, your WWL stronghold, your WCW mixed in a little bit. But most of your rock and wrestling boom onward wrestling history, I'm kind of on the other spectrum of that, with international indies and stuff like that. And I've been able to recruit Brad in that regard a good bit.
Yeah, and I mean, what I appreciate a lot from them is that they are WWE centric guys, especially kind of like you said, the rock and wrestling era, which is an era of WWE that I'm not a fan of. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people expect it to be, because that's around the time I was growing up. It was kind of the height of Hogan popularity, but never been my thing. I've never been a fan of WWE. I was always NWA, Japan, kind of the foreign stuff, World of Sport. The first time I saw World of Sport, I was like super hooked. And like Shoot Style and MMA, even like early MMA, I was a big fan of, like with the Gracies and stuff. But Justin and Scott, it's a show I still listen to. And I know they're WWE centric, and they're guys who a lot of their background is WWE, but they never come across to me kind of condescending towards other wrestling, which I think a lot of people can be. And I really appreciate that from them, so good on them. You know, they do a WWE centric show that I'm actually willing to listen to, which is pretty nice.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it when I I guess I can tell you the story about how we sort of got together overall. So Justin and Scott came on mine and Parv's podcast for Starrcade 1988, and you know, that was when me and Parv had guests for every show. So they were just kind of one in a line. Like, we knew about their podcast, thought it'd be some good cross promotion. So they came on fine. Usually, you know, when we have guests like that, I mean, we're cordial, we do the show, but there it kind of ends, you know, most of the communication ends when the podcast is over. It just is what it is. But afterwards, a couple of days after the podcast, Justin started talking to me on Facebook chat. And we just initially like hit it off. Like, we were talking about sports, we were talking about life. We really developed a quick bromance with each other, and that just blossomed. And then really, I think what cemented the website overall was the WrestleMania 29 tailgate, which gets talked about a lot on our podcast. But that really really was a special moment because I didn't know who Brad was till that day. And that whole weekend's when I met Scott and Justin for the first time. I came up there and it was just a great bonding and kind of the origin of everything that's happened since then, and really where I formed friendships with all three of those guys, Justin, Scott, and Brad. But going back to your original thing about them being so WWF centric, it is weird because, you know, my mindset as a wrestling fan, I'm so generated on kind of looking at all these areas and getting a worldview or going back in history and revisiting stuff. And so it is kind of different for me. And this is something I've talked to them about. It's challenging to me to see how, you know, they really don't have any interest to watch like Misawa versus Kobashi. Like, that doesn't interest them. But on the other hand, I mean, they watch a lot of stuff weekly. They're doing a review every week. They're doing a podcast every week where they watch the WWE pay-per-view. There, we're doing the Network Adventure, which is like an hour and a half TNT show we have to watch every week. So they're averaging at least an hour a day of watching wrestling. So they're not hardcore wrestling fans. They just prefer the kind of WWF-centric viewpoint of it, which is kind of odd, but something I've had to get used to.
Yeah, no, and it is odd because I think, at least from my experience, there isn't a lot of people who get that hardcore, and then it's about WWE specifically. Most people, once they do start getting more, it's kind of like no one's, you know, super into music and they're a great musician and their favorite bands are just like bubblegum pop music. Usually they start getting into other stuff and they start like branching out into weirder genres and stuff that they find that you say is like more challenging and things like that. But right. For them, it's all WWE, which I get. And that, I mean, watching so much footage, I think someone posted on someone was questioning me and Pete because on This Week in Wrestling, we both mentioned like, oh, you know, if I fall asleep watching wrestling, that's not a slight to the wrestling. It's just that, you know, statistically speaking, that's just likely what's going to happen because at all times I'm watching wrestling. So if I'm going to fall asleep, I'm probably going to be while I'm watching wrestling. And someone actually asked, like, how much are you watching? And this was at the height of, like, the last minute of GWE. I'm cramming as much as I can. Pete was really pushing me. We were doing, like, three to four hour pay-per-view reviews per episode. And I sussed it all out, and I'm like, I'm watching about 40 hours of wrestling a week. Now, watching footage is becoming a full-time job for me at that point.
Right.
You know what I'm
serious?
Yeah. And I
shit.
When the topic was broached, I actually was saying, like, oh, I don't feel like I actually watch that much. And then I put all the numbers together, and I'm like, fuck, that's a lot when
you
look
at
it. How
do you find the time, by the way? I'm curious. I'm genuinely
long
curious.
Long commute, and I usually watch at least something on every break. So I take an hour lunch every day. I've got about 3 hours of commute every day combined, like both ways back and forth. So that's already 4 hours per day.
I have a question for you.
What's that?
So you say WWE. Would you say, to make an analogy that's relative to what we to our podcast, WWE is like Bud Light, and everything else you watch is like craft beer?
Yeah, you could say that, but because
you were
unfortunately
saying
some things are like liquor.
Yeah, because the way you were talking about it, it was like WWE is like a little bit too, and I hate to use the word mainstream, but you know, mainstream for you to really pay attention to as much as you as the other stuff that you watch.
Right. No, yeah, I could see that. I don't know. Chad, what do you think about that analogy?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly, like, WWE is going to be your whatever label you want to put on it. It's your summer blockbuster. It's your mainstream thing.
Yeah.
Everything beyond that, but especially now, because now there's such a gap between WWE and what they do business-wise compared to everybody else. I mean, for example, today, Timothy, I was on the Voices of Wrestling message board, and somebody was like commending All Japan because they were like, well, the last time they were in this venue, they had 390 fans. This time they had 427. It's like, well,
yeah.
You know, I mean, WWE just legitimately had 90,000 people at a show at WrestleMania in a $1 million gate. So there's such a gulf. I mean, New Japan would be your number two promotion. And you can see on some of these spot shows, like on the Best of the Super Junior Tour, I mean, they play houses for hundreds, not thousands.
No, yeah, it is. And I mean, All Japan is like you said, they're really proud that their most recent high mark was about 1400, and it's like you said, right, 90,000 for WWE, and that's people are praising All Japan for that, because it's this huge turnaround where just a year ago they were drawing like 200 people.
Yeah, and like this 100. Is in Japan. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's definitely WWE is definitely the huge big behemoth of everything. So essentially, if you make that comparison, it's like WWE is Budweiser, Coors, and Miller. They're all right. They're all the big three. They're not just the biggest one. They're all of them.
And it's the All American show owned by a German corporation.
Exactly.
sorry, I totally just the pacing there.
No, it's fine. So Chad, we've already gone, I think, way too long talking about the background of PTBN. But that, like, I've said this many times. This is the whole point of the show. I'm trying to find out the stuff that I'm interested in as someone who's a fan of the network, because I am a fan of the network. That's why it was probably the most exciting thing to hear, when you guys mentioned you were interested in having us on the network, because I was a huge fan. I mean, a month or so ago, Adrian brought that up. He's like, hey, maybe we should try to be on that PTBN network. And I'm kind of like, I really just started trolling, and I'm like, well, fucking duh. Like, of course we want to be on the network, dude. Like, that was kind of, honestly, if I'm perfectly honest, that was like my point. I'm like, I've been wanting to be on that network for a while. Like, if I'm truthfully honest about it, and it came down to it where I'm like, yeah, of course we want to try, but we're also supposed to be talking about you. Now, I asked you for your hobbies, which is just so everyone kind of will pull back the curtain here. This is the first episode of this series. Even we've had a few practice episodes before, including a really good one with Dylan Hales, a great one with Stephen Graham, who was, I would say, a little bit conspicuous in his absence when you're talking about, PTBN stalwarts, but I'll just leave that there for now. but I asked you for your kind of hobbies, and the first two that you gave me really stood out to me, because they're just like the weirdest things. Like, it's not weird, but just like so foreign to my own sensibilities. The first one being jam bands, which I'm assuming that you mean like bands who jam, like in the same realm of like Fish.
Correct.
Okay. Which is like, I guess would be the biggest jam band. People, I guess, know the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. Grateful Dead. And then Fish were the successors of that. And then we can discuss, there's not really anybody else that's took up the mantle. Fish.
I think people kind of consider Doors kind of jam ish. They're like maybe more long format than jam bands. And then like maybe Primus. I don't know. What do you think about that? Where do you get on that?
I kind of, when my interest in jam bands was, I would actually say, and this is kind of weird, but Pearl Jam was sort of my avenue into jam bands, which you wouldn't think of Pearl Jam as a jam band in a traditional sense. But I mean that just from the sense of they play a pretty varied set list every night. It's not the same, here's your generic 30 songs we're going to be playing every night. They do add in some like taglines into certain songs, like in Daughter and Better Man. When they play those live. So that kind of got me experiencing that. Pearl Jam in 2000, they released every single show on CD that they did from their tour. I think it was like 72. It's nuts to think about it now, like in the age of Spotify and everything else. But they like released in the store all 72 of their concerts that they did in 2000. And I must have bought like probably 30, 35 of them.
Like all separately?
Yeah, all separately.
Okay.
It would be, August 5th, Atlanta, Georgia, and it'd be a 2-CD set of the concert. August 6th, Nashville, et cetera. Really, really wild. And I know I purchased at least 30 to 35. So that kind of set me off. And at that point in time, I was 14. So that was a really good, I guess, kind of time in my life to start branching out and experience. And by that point, I'd started listening to Led Zeppelin, the classic standards, Beatles. But that got me more exploring more stuff. And then Fish is really the band that blew the doors open. And then when I went to college is when Phish broke up in 2004. They went on hiatus, but I was able to find a couple other bands to fill the void, and they're still my favorite bands to this day.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and placetobenation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
So, Pearl Jam got you into it, and then you kind of, I guess, throughout high school, did you actually get to go to any concerts, or where did you even grow up? I guess that would be the question. Did you grow up in a place where any of those kind of bands would even play live?
I grew up in the, I actually grew up about 5 minutes from where I live currently. Grew up in Metro Atlanta, about an hour from Atlanta. So I was able to go to concerts in Atlanta, but in high school, I didn't have, I guess, any, actually, funny story about Pearl Jam. So Pearl Jam came to Atlanta in 2003 on their tour, but it was the night of my prom.
Oh,
so I had to make a choice. So I picked prom over Pearl Jam. Yeah, probably a mistake in retrospect.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope you married the lady that you went to prom
with. I did not. That was a big deciding factor in picking prom, and so that was a mistake. But yeah, I mean, in high school, I went to some concerts, but not really. I wasn't very entrenched in the lower tier, I guess, of the jam band scene, because a lot of the I guess jam bands that are around now, like Widespread Panic, a band called Umphrey's McGee, a band called Sound Tribe Sector 9, and a band called the Disco Biscuits, they were sort of just starting to come out.
Okay, yeah, I actually am familiar with the Disco Biscuits.
I love that name.
But that's okay. The only one.
Yeah, the Disco Biscuits are my favorite band.
Period. Oh, wow.
I've seen them 16 times live. absolutely adore them.
Yeah, my unfortunately, my wife is like a huge music fan. I guess it's not unfortunate, but it doesn't mean that like a good percentage of our house is taken up by her records. She's worked at record stores her whole life. She worked at Amoeba out here in Los Angeles, and she makes music and all that. So I get exposed to a lot more music than I probably would otherwise because I'm too busy listening to all these podcasts.
Right.
So what – it's like I said, this is – it's very foreign for me. What is it like listening to a record? I mean, I kind of get the idea of the show, and I also kind of wonder because you don't – and this is – I mean, I hate to say this because it's so like stereotypical, but you don't strike me as the jam band guy because you just – you don't come across as the guy who's like hanging out smoking weed at the concert and doing that whole thing. So
yeah.
So the – you know, and I know that that's not everything that it is about, but you definitely don't fit to me with the little exposure that I have to you. You don't seem to fit the stereotypical jam band fan. So what's
don't fit the scene. I think my attraction is just the fact that how they can organically play different songs, especially the Disco Biscuits. The Disco Biscuits are able to integrate techno kind of stuff in, and they can play 20, 25 minutes and I'm not bored by it. They can segue into a different song that I don't even hear coming until they're actually playing that song. So that to me, it just kind of, I guess, speaks to me. But I also think, I get that a lot, that I don't strike because the other thing I'm pretty, I would say my, besides rock, my absolute favorite style of music, and this is something me and Parv share, is late 80s, early 90s hip-hop and rap. So like Wu-Tang Clan, you know, Dr. Dre, Tupac, Biggie Smalls, that type of scene, A Tribe Called Quest, those type of rap artists, even going back to the 80s with like Slick Rick. So, and then most people are very surprised to hear that as well, given I guess my accent, my demeanor, and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's another one. It doesn't surprise me as much. I find it funny that you and Parv are both into that scene because I always think it's weird. Like I almost relate to you guys because I'm into like just maybe a generation after that. So I'm like I was a huge fan of like late 90s, early 2000s underground hip hop, which it feels like a lot of it was kind of trying to be more like 80s hip hop. And right. So it's like, I almost am like, God damn, you guys would really like this stuff if you checked it out. You know what I mean? But unfortunately, Parv won't listen to anything that's new or watch anything that's new and modern. So it's impossible to get him to check anything out.
Yeah. Life peaked in 1994.
Yeah, exactly. The entire world at that point was the tops. Right. But no, I guess part of my thing is just you say that, you know, the way that they're able to play into this. And I think Disco Biscuits, you tell me that they're firmly planted as a jam band. I believe you. But they also, like you said, kind of use different influences and styles, and realistically I think being a jam band is almost genre-less, as it's kind of like that's the point, is being able to like kind of master different tempos and go all over the place. So it's not really a specific type of music, but it does kind of usually has kind of a groove, kind of a strong bass line, I think what people expect, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's not a distinctive sound because, like, I would say Widespread Panic is certainly a jam band. You listen to a Widespread Panic song, it's going to sound a lot different from a Disco Biscuits song.
Yeah, and what I was going to say is Disco Biscuits kind of leads me into, like, Check, 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 which I think is kind of their jam-ish. And I've seen them live, and I really enjoyed what they do because they're live, it's more improvisational. And they have kind of random different stuff, like singers out of nowhere and different people playing drums with the band and this and that. But then on record, it's kind of more straightforward for them. So what I wonder is kind of more of the entrenched hardcore jam band. Are their records primarily recorded live? Are their records primarily kind of improvisational sets, or do they have songs? Like, do they have practice songs? They record the song in a studio, they put that out as a record. Is that a common thing, or does it, I mean, obviously both things exist, but how common is it that a jam band puts out like a pre-recorded, these are songs that we had planned out from beginning to end record?
I mean, most of the jam bands have records that are like that. But I would say to most people that are fans of like Fish or the Disco Biscuits or Widespread Panic or Humphreys McGee, the records are very insignificant. It just doesn't matter. I think the Grateful Dead does have some really good records, like American Beauty. But it lives and dies on the live scene and the live recording. And the Disco Biscuits and Fish, there's so much. I mean, you can listen legally because they allow the audience to tape their concerts. So you can legally listen to hundreds of shows from a given year of the bands. And that's kind of where your interest will lie the majority of the time.
Yeah, that's really cool, actually. And it makes sense because, yeah, like it sounds like the recorded product that they're putting out is like 10% of the point. And the other.
Yeah, I would say that. That's at like a maximum, actually. Yeah.
Wow. And yeah. And like the real thing that you care about is those live shows. So not having access to it would be unimaginable. I mean, no. The idea that how would you become a fan of this band if you don't, you know what they're doing.
Right.
But I guess that's like why I put Ray Stevens so high on my GWE, you know, just based on what people have said about him in the past and all this and that, and what you hear from people that you respect their opinion. So I guess that's how you get like brought into the scene, right? You kind of hear from people, hey, this band's really cool live. But luckily now with everything we have and them allowing people to record it freely and it all being there, you don't have to just go based off of kind of word of mouth to build your buzz, which is really smart of them. I couldn't imagine them trying to do something else with that.
Yeah, like in the 80s, the Deadheads were passing around cassettes like the shows. So it was just... that's one thing where technology, I mean, you can go to the Live Music Archive if you Google that in, and then you can do a search, and yeah, you can hear thousands of shows from these bands. And it's been pretty good. I mean, some of these tapers that tape these shows, they sit right behind the soundboard. So, I mean, of course, like if you're listening to a Grateful Dead show from 1968, it's not going to be the clearest recording. But some of the stuff where they're right behind the soundboard or if they can actually patch into the soundboard recording, it's a very full integrative recording that sounds crystal clear.
Nice. That's really cool. That's actually got me excited. See, this is the problem with this show. I'm talking to all of you guys who are interested. You're multifaceted people. You don't just all you do is wrestling. And you're talking to me about cool, interesting stuff that you're into. And then it gets me excited to go check it out. And then now I have to spend more time checking out other weird and random media and arts and things like this that I never would have seen before. And then I don't have time to watch more wrestling. So unfortunately, Chad, you're eating up my time here.
Or you could do the gimmick I do and listen to music while you're watching wrestling.
You know,
that's a good multitask.
I kind of do that already. A lot of Japanese wrestling, I'll just watch it without the sound. But the problem is that if there's going to be music playing, it's usually something my wife is playing. So I'm going to have to talk her into checking out some of this stuff when we get off the line here. So I forgot to ask you. I've been meaning to ask everyone, and this is my fault. I need to become a better interviewer in general, or maybe I just need to write down my bullet points and remember. But the way I've been wanting to start the series off is, okay, so you are in charge of the Big Boys Play Twitter, correct?
Yes, at Big Boys Play WCW. Yes,
okay, and then the other thing is I think there's a disconnect sometimes because people don't always mention who they are on the board on their podcasts. So what username do you use on the PWO board?
I am a Soup23 on pretty much any board. You'll see me on PWO Voices of Wrestling. When I had an Observer subscription, it was that there. Wrestling Awards Forum, I'm also Soup23 there.
Okay. And is that a reference to Seinfeld? Was that one of the soups that they ordered on Seinfeld from the Soup Nazi?
No. My last name's Campbell. So
it was actually a bit of a joke, but okay, that makes sense. What's the significance of the 23 though?
Michael Jordan. I've had the username Soup20. I found Death Valley Driver probably in 2001, around there. So I was 15 years old. You know, probably one of the first times I've ever signed up, or when I signed up for AIM, AOL Instant Messenger, the first time I was like, oh, okay. Everybody at that time called me Soup. That was my name. And then Michael Jordan had just retired, so I was still a big fan of him. So Soup 23, there it was.
Huh. All right. Well, that makes sense. At least you stuck with it.
Haven't evolved from then. I'm like Parv with message board handles.
Yeah. Okay. So then the second, because I referenced that there was two things that you mentioned that I felt were very kind of opposite of me. And the other one you mentioned was Disney World. Now, yeah. I have a bit of an aversion to Disney World. I'm just not a fan. I don't like it there. It's not my thing.
That's the one thing we have in common, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. So not necessarily sell me on it, but just let me see it through your eyes. What is it about Disney World? Which Disney World have you frequented most often? Have you frequented multiple? Is there only one Disney World?
Well, I've never been to Disneyland.
Okay.
Okay, I've only been to Disney World. There's, I think, five or six Disney parks. There's one in Paris, one in Tokyo. But I've only been to Disney World in Florida. And one thing that I want to mention, too, with this is both with the Jam Band and the Disney World communities, like, to me, there's so many similarities with the wrestling community.
Okay.
Like, there's message boards, there's the hardcore, like, debating of stuff, like greatest wrestler ever. The same debate happens for the Jam Band on the Disco Biscuits, like, what's the best show they've ever played, or what's their best song, etc. And the same thing, shockingly, would happen with Disney World, and, like, what's the best ride, and what's the best hotel, or whatever.
Okay.
So, Timothy, have you ever been to Disney World?
I don't believe I have. I've been to Disneyland.
Yeah. So Disneyland's, my brother went there last year for his honeymoon, and he also is a pretty big Disney fan. And he said Disneyland was nice, but nothing compared to Disney World. I mean, it's certainly commercial. I'm guessing that's kind of some of the aversion you may have, is, I guess, the corporate.
I hate that I come across as that guy, number one. And number two, like, I hate to say something like that, but yes and no. It's okay. Kind of like, I like to shop at locally owned businesses, and it's not right. Like I'm cool or this and that. It's like, I know that it won't be as packed. You know what I mean? And I won't have to deal with the crazy lawn. Like, I'm not a big, I want to be around people. That's why, like, this past year, I was like, maybe I'll drive out to Texas and go to the Evolve shows and skip WrestleMania, because I don't want to be in this giant building filled with, you know, 90,000 people. So, like, I do kind of like stuff that's low key, but it's not. I hate for people to think that it's like, hey, I think I'm cool. It's really not. It's just I don't like being around a lot of people in one big space. I do have some issues with, like, big corporations, but that's not necessarily it, because it's not like I'm going to, like, small mom and pop adventure land or theme parks. That's not my thing either. I have actually been to some, because I have family up in the Pacific Northwest, so I've been to, like, Needle Point and stuff like that, where it's like a locally owned theme park, and it's just not my thing, you know.
I would say a Disney World has a lot more stuff for adults. First, you have Epcot with the World Showcase, which you're not going to have hardly any kids around there, because you got to walk a long ways. And that's, like, one of my, now that I'm an adult, that's my favorite place to be in all of Walt Disney World, because you can go around, you can try authentic cuisine from all the countries. You can try different drinks and stuff from all the countries. There's actually a thing where you can drink around the world, which is pretty neat. And pretty challenging. So I definitely think there's a lot more adult areas at Walt Disney World, whereas with Disneyland would be the equivalent of, like, Magic Kingdom. And Magic Kingdom, it's tougher to find kind of those quiet pockets. The other thing I like about Disney World is just in general with Disney is, I mean, you know, Atlanta has a Six Flags and those roller coasters are okay, but they're very dry. And there's something about the Disney rides and the animatronics and the stuff they integrate that really brings a thematic aspect to their rides where I feel engrossed. And I feel like they do take extra care to, like, make the rides overly thematic and interesting, even though they may not have as many, quote-unquote, thrills as your roller coasters at a Universal Studios or Six Flags. So that I appreciate. I mean, there's a ton of great restaurants. Some of the best restaurants I've ever eaten at have been actually at Walt Disney World. which is kind of weird, but I mean, like, highly respectable restaurants with good, it's own like entity down there. I went there on my honeymoon and was able to eat at this restaurant called Victoria and Albert's, which was just probably the best meal I've ever eaten in my life. It was a 3-hour experience. You had to wear a jacket. I mean, it was a stuffy, you know, upscale dinner, but just amazing food and hospitality there. Once in kind of a lifetime experience. But I guess beyond that too, and this will sound, I mean, Disney World, I do think is something where, like, me sitting in my living room right now and talking to you guys about it, it sounds lame. Like to say, like, oh, you know, I like going on It's a Small World. But when I'm inside the park as a 30-year-old adult, I don't know. There's something about it with me where, like, yeah, this is a blast. And I don't know. I can't really describe it. It's like when I'm there, I'm transported to a different place. And I don't feel that way with any other amusement park or place I've been to.
I kind of get it, right? Like – in the sense that it's – how do I put it? It's like – I hate to compare it to this, but like McDonald's, right? Where you know what you're going to get. That's like really my only comparison there is like you know exactly what quality you're going to get, and you'll get that quality everywhere you go. And it's kind of like Disneyland, like you said. You drink around the world and there's fine restaurants of all different cuisines and all the – so it's kind of like – rather than risking or the expense or everything else that comes with the kind of like real world experience that would be like instead of going to New Orleans, you go to like a French Quarter themed area of Disney World.
Right.
And you know that it's going to be clean, it's going to be safe, and everything is not – nothing's going to disappoint. You know that you're going to get food. There's going to be a cool band. And it's kind of like that regard. Well, meanwhile, if you go to actual New Orleans, you might have like a homeless guy try to throw up on you or something. You know what I mean? You might go to a restaurant where the service, the people are rude, the food is late, or you get food, you know. And I totally get kind of that idea of it. And I'm not like a world traveler, so I'm not even shitting on it like a you should go to the real places. It's like I'm just saying like I totally understand, I guess, that concept of it. But – I just when I hear you say like looking for quiet pockets in what was the name of the area that you said that you likened to Disneyland, the Magic Kingdom?
Magic Kingdom, yeah.
Yeah, so like looking for a quiet pocket in the Magic Kingdom just sounds to me like why don't I just go somewhere where I live? Like why don't I just go to somewhere in my neighborhood where I don't have to like search for a quiet pocket? I just know that like the last booth on the left-hand side, I can just sit there for a few hours and be left alone. You know, and that's kind of my thing.
I don't like Disney World to me is something that I go in and out of, honestly. I mean, I've been 10 times in my life. I usually go about once every 2 to 3 years because it is expensive. But now that I have a son, I'm sure I'll probably be going more.
But
I mean, it's something I get really into. Also, the other thing I'll say about Disney World that I like is I'm a very anal planner. And I think that goes into because, you know, I've been on other trips elsewhere, but I'm not someone that kind of likes going on a trip and saying, you know, why don't I just wander the streets and where I end up, that's where I end up. That's just not my style. I am very anal, like I say, that when I go to Disney World, I have my touring plan printed off where I've been able to maximize the most amount of stuff I can do in the least amount of wait time. There's actually a website that's, you know, created to help optimize that, which is kind of crazy. But they do different modules and statistics and are able to give you the most efficient, like, way you can do Disney World. And so that kind of speaks to me and that I can do that. And while, you know, at 2 o'clock on a 2 o'clock on a day in Magic Kingdom, yeah, it's going to be packed. But by that time, I'm going to some of the less crowded attractions because I've already hit the highlights. So in some way, I kind of feel like I beat the system in a way.
Yeah, I actually love all that. If I could have a vacation where all I did was like try to make efficient plans, I'm down with it because like I totally love it.
You like making plans?
Yeah, and I love trying to figure out the most efficient ways and like how can we do this so we can like skip the most amount of steps and like you said, kind of beating the system, like kind of getting one over on everybody else. They're all waiting in line, those chumps. I got this figured out, and like I totally get all that. So the idea that Disney World is the perfect place to kind of plan those trips and make that your vacation, I totally get it, especially because you know you're gonna get the optimum bang for your buck. Meanwhile, like I said, you go somewhere else and you may end up kind of having some stuff that goes sideways, or you know, weather is inclement or something. Just random things can throw off a whole plan if you're actually trying to go like anywhere else where it's not as controlled. Like I said, the problem for me is it's just overcrowded. And I'm not going to get into the whole corporate side of things because that's a whole another big thing. I mean, I'm the guy who just a couple days ago I was having a conversation with my wife where I'm like, hey, you think I could maybe, you know, quit this job where I have full benefits, where I have no copay on any of my healthcare costs and all this and that to go work at a cooperative? You know what I mean? Like, that's me. Right, I'm that guy where I'm like, I think corporations are so bad that I shouldn't even work for one, even though the one I work for gives me amazing benefits and saves people's lives and all that, you know? So it's just like – that's where I'm at. So it's tough for me to kind of put those two things together. I couldn't imagine personally taking a trip to Disney World ever. And the fact that I never went when I was a kid, it'll probably never happen for me as an adult unless, you know, something crazy happened. But it's just not very likely. So, Chad, I think we've gone about as long as we should, unfortunately. I'd love to keep talking to you forever, but you know, we all have lives and we're trying to keep this show a little bit more limited. That was a fun conversation on PWO recently about long podcasts,
right? How long they should be.
Yeah, exactly. So I have closing stuff and I am completely forgetting it, but normally I've been asking people, well, number one, I'll go, Adrian, do you have any questions you want to ask Chad before we close up?
Yeah. Tim mentioned that you were into board games, and we don't have to get into it, but just out of curiosity, what board games do you play?
So I'd say, I mean, you know, this is kind of one of those things too with when people hear like, oh, you're into board games, you know, automatically now it comes up like Monopoly, Uno, that type of stuff. Sorry. But in the past 10 years, board games and modern board games have had just a boom, really, where there's thousands of designer board games created every year. So Ticket to Ride, I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
I'm not.
It'll be like at a Target or something like that. That's kind of an introductory type board game to stuff. But yeah, but I play Ticket to Ride, like the Beatles song. But I would say Ticket to Ride, Timothy, you'll understand this reference. Like Ticket to Ride would be the equivalent of the Super J Cup 1994.
Okay. Like, how many murderers are in it?
So that, like, you know, when people say, well, I want to get into Japanese wrestling, you know, that was kind of like the standard bearer, and then you go from that. So now at the point I'm at, I mean my absolute favorite board game of all time is Summoner Wars, which is a two-player game where you're different factions and you have a set of cards characters, and each card does a special power. But it's something me and my wife have really enjoyed, and board games overall has been something where my wife couldn't care less about wrestling or sports in general or the Disco Biscuits or any of the music I like, pretty much hates all that stuff. Board games has been a hobby that we've both enjoyed together over the past 2 years and been able to spend a lot of quality time doing.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was curious because there's a board game I've been looking at on Amazon for a while that I'm kind of interested in called Fiasco. It's more of a role-playing game, actually. But
yes. I've actually watched a live play of it. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
There's a guy at the PWG shows who always brings a bunch of board games, but they're a lot more of the kind of social games, like Cards Against Humanity type ones. Not necessarily that game. We've actually never played that, but it's more of that kind of community games. And like there was like a Diamond Thief game and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I play games like that too. That's kind of what we call for me, it'd be like an end of the night game.
Right.
Where there's social deduction, like one of you's a traitor and you have to figure out. I love games like that too.
Yeah, and they're good for the end of the night because they're a lot more fun when everyone's drunk.
Right.
So board games, that was actually an interesting topic and I wanted to get into it, but like I said, we're getting late in it.
It's all good.
The other thing that I've been asking everybody before they get out of here is about something that maybe fans of your podcasts, fans of your recent series, your articles that you've been doing on IWA Mid-South, which I fucking love, by the way, people who know you from this stuff, what is something that might shock them that we haven't already talked about to know about Chad? I mean, like you said, your love of early or late 80s, early 90s hip hop is probably something that people don't think of, and kind of your Disney World love is another one. But is there anything else, maybe, like, I don't know, were you the star quarterback of your football team or something along those lines that people would never imagine?
No, I feel like I've been pretty open with stuff I want. I'm pretty open with the viewers. I mean, I we don't get into, political or theological things on our podcast or any of that. I'm not too politically charged. So that may be something. I really don't know. I guess I was pretty good at golf in high school. I don't think anybody would know that. I went to the University of Georgia, but I had a chance to scholarship at West Georgia, which is the local college in golf, if I'd have chosen that. So I guess that would kind of be a little nugget of information I don't think I've ever said on a podcast. But otherwise, I try to be an open book. I mean, I do put my full name out there. Everybody knows I'm married and has a son, so that kind of stuff.
Okay. I think for me, as someone who was just a fan, and now as I've kind of gotten somewhat more acquainted with you, I think one thing that I found somewhat interesting is I think you come across not like depressed, but low energy a lot on podcasts, I think. And I think in actuality, in real life, you seem to be a lot more jovial kind of guy. You know, you're kind of all over the place and happy and cheerful. So that's one thing that I think people maybe don't realize.
Yeah. I mean, to be frank, like I try to be pretty low key. I mean, that's kind of my laid back. I do in a podcast setting, I try to present a laid back persona.
Okay.
I've never thought like podcasts where people are screaming at each other. That doesn't mean you can't have debates and disagree. I mean, me and Parf disagree a good bit, I think, but I've never enjoyed like kind of a shouting match or getting legit pissed off at a podcast or something like that. So that is something I consciously do try to do. Even in life, I feel like I'm a pretty easy person to get along with. I would say another thing about me that I think is kind of interesting is I feel like I feel like I do have a lot of acquaintances in life, but very few true friends. And I don't know if that's like a trust issue or just kind of my interests have never aligned with my friends that much. Like, I don't have anybody locally that watches wrestling, for instance, and really haven't since the end of the Attitude Era. So that's something that's kind of happened. Me and my wife are similar in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that just kind of tends to happen, especially, you know, like you said, when you just, when you kind of don't fit, when you don't fit the mold for the different things that you're into. And it's kind of, it's unfortunate. Me and my wife have like a conversation about that where it's like we meet people and then we get along with them really well. And then you find out like they smoke pot. And you're like, oh, fuck, like you can't, there's a certain like barrier where it's like, well, if we both don't smoke pot, then we can't be super close friends. And that just tends to happen a lot of times, but it happens with other things too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, that's something I've found. I mean, like sports, I'm usually able to find like a good barrier of entry. But then one thing I've found is, I do think people where I live, I do think there's a stereotypical assumption that, if you look at me, you look at where, you know, my family, where they came from, which was upper mid class for the area. You would assume that, you know, staunch Republican, listening to country music, you know, riding the Bible Belt, that kind of image gets in your mind. And that's something that I've tried to, I guess, break down a little bit and not present that while still... I feel like I portray kind of that same clean-cut image. Like, if you see pictures of me, you know, it's not obvious. I don't fit in that mold.
Right. No, that's true. Well, all right, Chad, thank you so much for having you on. We obviously want to plug all of your stuff, which is essentially everything on the PTBN network. Like I mentioned,
pretty easy.
That awesome article or articles, the series of articles that you've been working on. Everyone should be reading those. And the Where the Big Boys Play, but what else is there? What else do we plug?
Yeah, so, I mean, Where the Big Boys Play, that's kind of my main podcast, me and Parv. We try to get out, I would say, two shows a month. It's pretty tough with me working him 5 hours ahead and so forth. But, you know, thank you for the loyal following we've had for that. It's been amazing that we still have able to keep a good following. And, you know, placetobenation.com, when you're listening to this, we've launched our new feed, which is the PTBN pop side of things. And that's something that I've kind of been wanting to integrate a while where – you know, we started the website, we wanted to be all things pop culture, but, I mean, let's face it, most of our original core audience was wrestling, but everybody has interest outside of that, I would hope. So this is kind of a way to alienate that, but also to invite you to, you know, if you want to just come for wrestling, that's fine. That's here on these podcast feeds. But, you know, give this other stuff a shot. You're going to hear about, like I was telling you guys before we started, beers I'd never, you know, even dreamed of before. You're going to hear about comics. You're going to hear, you know, sports analysis and different types of shows with different voices. So I'm excited about it. It's something I've kind of been hoping we'd do for a while, and we just recently launched that.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, in a weird way, we were having similar thoughts in different places without even realizing, because like you said, we're wrestling fans, we have other interests. That's the whole point of this show. So I hope that, you know, we got to know Chad a little bit better so that we kind of saw who you are outside of the guy who talks about, you know, early 80s NWA shows with Parv.
Right.
So, all right. Well, thank you, Chad. Thank you so much for being our guest. And, you know, have a good night, I guess. I don't know.
Have a good night. Thank you, Chad.
Thanks, guys.
We need a sign-off, I think.
We should.
I should have a premium sign-off.
Okay.